That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
I'm Lucas Woods, and you're listening to 91.7 WNEC-FM, New England College Radio, Henniker, New Hampshire. Now, I think we've probably all heard that clip of Neil Armstrong saying that iconic line on July 20th, 1969, when he landed on the moon with Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins. Now, I think that moment really sent us into a new technological age. Of course, we have these fears nowadays of AI replacing us, but if we think about it, back then, they had those fears too. In the 60s, computers were brand new, and so were all these machines that were entering the manufacturing industry, and people were afraid that they were going to be replaced, and sometimes they were being replaced. And I think that we can really connect these sentiments now to really understand how maybe people back then were afraid of technology, but how it also came to benefit us now in ways that we don't even think about anymore. I mean, even back then, with NASA, they had human computers. You know, Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, Mary Jackson, as you see in the film Hidden Figures, they were thought of as more reliable than computers because people didn't know really how computers worked back then. And even if they did, they were really new. And of course, we got the movies, you know, Space Odyssey and, of course, The Terminator, that really reflect how our culture was afraid of advancing technology. And so today in this episode, I want to recognize that even though we have a lot of fear around technology, I think we always have. And we have to understand that even from space travel and the moon landing and from even before with NASA, we gained so much technology that we don't even think about when we use it. I first want to talk about smaller computers. So I read this BBC article about how the Apollo missions changed the world. And there was this quote from this MIT professor, David Mendel, who said, quote, "Apollo was the moment that people stopped talking about how big their computers were and started bragging about how small they were," unquote. Now, at the time in the 60s, most computers were the size of an entire room. And when it came to looking at the Apollo missions, they had to figure out how to make a computer fit in a space that wasn't as big as a small room. So eventually, they engineered their way into making a computer that was as small as a suitcase. Now, we might not think that that's pretty revolutionary in our time, but back then, that was a super big deal. And I think that because they used this computer during the moon landing and the astronauts got there safely and they came back safely, that was a big moment in proving that computers could be reliable. I mean, I can't imagine a world without computers in their current form. I mean, we have laptops, and we have our cell phones that we can do whatever we want on. I mean, we even have Apple Watches that are even smaller. Now, this process of miniaturization led to the computers that we use today. You know, we wouldn't have all these gadgets that we have without this idea of wanting our computers to get smaller. And while NASA didn't invent microchips, according to this NPR article I read about the NASA technology spinoffs, they did give them a good reputation and a good customer in the space missions. Microchips are nearly in everything we use electronically. Credit cards, cars, game consoles, microwaves, you name it. And speaking of microwaves, the original countertop version was actually made for the Apollo 11 mission too, according to another BBC article. And so were microwave meals. So, us college students, I don't know how far we get without that. Next thing I want to talk about is cordless tools. So while NASA didn't actually invent cordless tools, they essentially commissioned their invention. So back in the 60s, they partnered with Black & Decker, which we all know as one of the premier tool companies, right? According to NASA, these new battery-powered tools that they developed for the Apollo missions were used to collect the moon samples that they needed to collect on the moon for their science mission. And nowadays, that technology has extended to all kinds of equipment. You know, the Dustbuster came out all the way back in the 70s. That was a direct result of these cordless tools that NASA commissioned. And nowadays, I mean, we wouldn't have cordless drills, cordless vacuums, different construction equipment, landscaping equipment, even surgical instruments that we take for granted don't have cords on them now. They used to have them back then. I think that's pretty crazy that everything back then used to have all these cords attached to it. I can't imagine how they would have been getting in the way all the time. I mean, sometimes I have a hard time plugging things into a power strip and things getting messy. I can imagine back then how it must have been. Now, I think something else that's interesting about, you know, not wanting wires to be all messy is how NASA actually invented the wireless headset. When the astronauts on the Apollo missions were experiencing zero gravity, they couldn't have cords flying around in their way. So NASA commissioned the development of a headset that they could use to communicate with the astronauts, but it would have to be built into the helmet. You know, they couldn't be getting tangled into the cords the whole time they were up in space, considering, you know, there's no gravity and they're floating around. And they also developed this noise-canceling microphone because space is actually pretty loud. We think of it as like, oh, you know, it's a vacuum, you know, you can't hear anything. I mean, you can still hear all of the winds, though, coming through the walls, basically, which I think is pretty crazy if you hear, you know, different audio recordings of the ambient sound in a space station. And that hands-free technology transferred over to so many other markets. You know, when we watch movies where, you know, people in the office have this wireless headset and they can talk to someone from across a room and not need to, you know, see them right in their face. Even back then, all of that technology came from NASA. We wouldn't have that technology, even as early as we did, without that. And I mean, nowadays, it's obviously used in dispatch centers when it comes to police, fire, EMS, all that kind of stuff. All of those headsets are a result of the invention that NASA was like, hey, we need this for the mission. I think we should probably computerize police communications. So many of us have this image in our mind when we think of a mission control room for a space mission. And we think of those movies where it's about space, fictional or not, and they're all in that huge control room. There's all these computers around, and then the spacecraft is about to land, then it lands, then they all rise up and cheer. Now, that layout is space, right? Maybe go space when we think of that. But it's not only used in terms of space missions. That industries. According to NASA, emergency responders have made use of that same technology in their own control rooms. Now, this goes for the computers and just how it's laid out in general. And it also extends to emergency lights, like those searchlights you see when you're watching a car chase on YouTube, because sometimes I like to do that. A lot of those lights are actually xenon arc lamps, which are super bright lights that police and military can use, especially on helicopters, as we've seen through all those new broadcasts of, you know, seeing missing people searches or gang car chases. And something else that pilots use a lot of the time, not just in helicopters, is the fly-by-wire technology. I mean, I think this is crazy that before NASA did all of this for the space missions, we didn't have fly-by-wire. Pilots used to have to navigate everything on their own and do all these different laborious tasks while also just trying to fly the plane. Now, obviously, this was a concern for the Apollo missions, since getting to the moon for the first time isn't exactly an easy task. And according to NASA, engineers worked throughout the 1960s to find a way for the flight system to go digital, which would be much more reliable on those missions. And of course, they succeeded, and the moon landing mission used this fly-by-wire technology instead of the hydraulics of days past. You know, you used to have to move all these different things around, and that's a lot for one person. And in this case, Neil Armstrong, pretty smart guy, pretty fit guy, a lot to do for one person still. And now you're seldom going to find a modern aircraft that doesn't have this technology embedded right into it, because it's way more reliable and it's way safer, and it puts a lot less pressure on the pilots. And obviously, this technology isn't just used in planes and helicopters. It's also used in different nautical vehicles, like submarines and cars as well. Something else that we use in planes, cars, and all those other kinds of vehicles is anti-fogging technology. NASA first developed anti-fogging technology to ensure that the space mission's windows wouldn't fog up. I mean, I'm sure sometimes you've been in your car and And when you first get in it, your window starts to fog up, and you're like, oh, God, I can't see. I think the astronauts probably would like to see, since they're already in space and it's kind of black out there. It's already hard to see, and they don't want to make it worse. Now, obviously, this technology did eventually spread to the wider market. You know, of course, it's in airplanes, which I think it's pretty important. I mean, if I'm flying in a plane, I'd like my pilots to probably see where we're going. Especially, you know, if there's birds in the way or something like that. But it's also been used in things for our windshields, but also ski goggles and camera lenses and mirrors that we don't want to fog up either. You know, if you're trying to go to a big event, you don't want your mirror to be all fogged up so that you can't see. Something else that's pretty important to our vehicles, especially up here in New England, are winter tires. Now, in days past, winter tires had studs in them, and they tended to rip up the roads a little bit. And the space mission spacecrafts, you can imagine, are kind of expensive. And there's a lot of weight coming down there with a lot of force. And they wanted those tires to have traction, but also to not destroy everything in its path. You know, being pretty expensive, NASA needed to make sure that they could navigate and land the modules more effectively and safely. So they partnered with Goodyear to make these sturdy tires that didn't lose traction in temperatures below freezing, because I think that's one of the more important parts too, is that not just did we not want to rip all of the pavement up when we were landing, but even just being in space, it's pretty cold out there, and tires beforehand couldn't really take the cold without kind of losing their flexibility, and we wanted them to still kind of, you know, keep their traction on the moon. And these typical tires that we had before, they didn't work well on dry surfaces, and the moon is pretty dry. Now, NASA invented these studless winter tires in partnership with Goodyear for different spacecrafts, which eventually translated over to cars. They didn't destroy the roads like the old tires, and they would last for far longer. And something that I think is pretty cool is that the material that they use to make these tires is 5 times stronger than steel. Of course, we're talking about tires, but you ever think about where our tires meet the ground, like the pavement? Have you ever driven on a highway with grooved pavement? Thank NASA for that technology. Back when the agency was considering how space shuttles had to land back on Earth, they were worried about skidding. I mean, you didn't want your spacecraft, super, super expensive, especially for the time, just skidding across the pavement and landing somewhere where you didn't want to land. And, of course, you want your astronauts to get back alive and undamaged, just like your equipment that, again, was very expensive. And returning to Earth at such high speeds made this feat risky in itself, even just landing it. So according to NASA, they developed this method to reduce the risk. Safety grooving. This technology, which is done with diamond blades, I don't know, I think that's pretty cool, is widely used at airports nowadays to prevent hydroplaning and skidding. It's also been applied on highways, stairways, sidewalks, and the like. I mean, when I'm thinking of when I fly a plane, when I land, I don't want the plane to just start turning sideways because the ground's wet or it just starts skidding because it's going so, so fast. And when you're traveling in a car at high speeds, which we can all admit to doing, this grooved pavement, if it's on the highway, makes you less likely to skid. And when it rains, the water drains through the grooves and lessens the likelihood of hydroplaning, 85% in particular, according to one California study. Something else that we really like to have in our cars, especially if you're a race car driver, is fireproof material. We know that not all inventions come from being proactive. And in this case, it came from an accident, a tragedy. In 1967, there was a fire on the Apollo 1 mission. And it killed the entire crew during a test. Just a test. And according to NASA, this caused them to do a lot more research into fire safety. They partner with several different companies to develop fire-resistant materials. This is especially important because the spacecrafts are filled with oxygen, and as we know, oxygen, massive fuel for a fire. And this technology is now used in clothing for industries ranging from firefighting to race car driving to deep sea diving. And NASA has also led the development of fire-resistant coatings for aircraft in high-risk buildings like chemical plants and oil refineries. I mean, you don't want a whole building sitting on fire, especially if it has something flammable like oil in it or chemicals that could just kind of explode. We don't want that everywhere. Something we do want everywhere, though, is memory foam. Memory foam, I think, is one of the best inventions. I mean, my mattress is memory foam, and I think it's pretty great. And I can thank NASA for that. Not only is it used for mattresses, and it wasn't even originally used for mattresses, but it can be used to just make your seat feel nicer on a plane, or nowadays, maybe in a car. Now, this technology was able to lessen the impact of flight on the body, which, I mean, if you can imagine, if you're on a space mission, that's a lot of impact, especially all that G-force. And this memory foam, for all you sports fans, also made it into football helmets. You know, we kind of want to prevent that CTE if possible, which we can't really prevent, but we can lessen the impact of it a little bit. And in a later episode, we're going to actually talk about CTE and its impacts. Now, one more thing for all you sports fans. You can also thank NASA for your Air Force Ones. Space helmets were originally made in the 60s and 70s by using a process known as blow rubber molding, according to an article from the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. In the late 1970s, a NASA engineer posed this technology to Nike. He was like, I think this can be used in your shoes. I think it can make things a little bit more bouncy, and I think maybe it can lessen the impact of that force on the ground on the foot. And they were like, sure, let's do it. And in the 80s, it was implemented into the first Nike Air series of shoes, which of course led into the Air Force Ones, and into the Air Maxes, which I personally wear, and I love my Air Maxes. They make everything so much more comfortable. Now, something that isn't quite as comfortable as my Nikes are MRIs. Now, I've had to get a lot of MRIs, right? I've had brain surgery, which requires MRIs before and after. And for me, they wouldn't have even known about what I had to get done if I hadn't gotten an MRI. And I have to thank NASA, I guess, for my life in that case. Because NASA helped develop MRIs and CAT scans. We wouldn't have that without NASA, or at least not as early as we did. According to the agency, they developed this digital imaging technology originally to see moon pictures with more clarity in the 60s. And of course, it was eventually applied to medicine. I mean, I'd like to think that my brain is on par with the moon, but I don't think that's the case. Now, something else like memory foam that we want to keep us comfortable is insulation. Now, we didn't have that great of insulation back before the space missions. And the astronauts on those missions had kind of all these extreme temperatures. I mean, it gets pretty cold in space, but it can also get pretty hot because of the sun. And NASA knew that they had to protect their astronauts and their equipment, which again was very expensive. So they commissioned the development of reflective insulation that could help do this, shielding their missions from both heat from the sun and extreme cold. This technology would be later adapted to make space blankets, which, I mean, we've seen everywhere, mostly in first aid kits. You know, you don't want to be in the wilderness in your car and then car breaks down and then, oops, hypothermia. Now, if you use a space blanket, aka a safety blanket nowadays, you probably aren't going to get hypothermia as easily. Now, according to NASA, these have been used for marathon runners, too, as well as the military and for humanitarian aid. And they've also been used in computers, which I think is pretty important, and for building insulation. Something else that's used in buildings and is pretty important are earthquake shock absorbers. Now, not every place is prone to earthquakes. I mean, I know in New England we're not exactly the hub of earthquakes, even though we did just have one the other day. I mean, I didn't feel it, but a lot of other people did, so I'm sure it was there. In a lot of places, they do have a lot of earthquakes, like in San Francisco or in Japan, places like that. And that shock can really destroy those buildings, which we've seen in even recent history. Just like the shock of liftoff can be pretty jarring to not only the mind, but the body and the equipment of a spaceship. Now, to protect a spacecraft's equipment during this rapid acceleration, NASA engineers led the development of special shock dampers based on fluid technology to prevent damage to the spacecraft. Now, this technology, according to NASA, has also been used in buildings in these earthquake-prone areas. Now, these can make buildings much more resilient to damage during these events because they're not going to wobble around quite as much. And even if they do, they're not going to start cracking. Now, here's a quick break for a PSA. This year, Smokey Bear turns 80 years old, and he's shared his birthday wish with us. My wish is for everyone to practice wildfire safety, because only you can prevent wildfires. So let's all make sure Smokey's wish comes true. Learn his wildfire prevention tips at smokeybear.com. Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Alright, let's talk about a couple more things before we get on to some space-related tunes. Something I think is really important in our homes, especially nowadays, are carbon monoxide detectors. So NASA developed these detectors in their most efficient form in the early 1970s on the Skylab missions. You know, you don't want your astronauts breathing in toxic gas. Now, earlier models of these detectors, which did exist, couldn't distinguish between carbon monoxide and water vapor. Now, those are two pretty different things. You know, carbon monoxide, don't want to breathe that stuff in, not great for you. Water vapor, perfectly fine for you. You can breathe it in all you want. Now, this method that NASA used to develop these new detectors, all their engineers, it was a pretty long process. It eventually made the spacecraft safer. And they were obviously later used commercially in businesses and pretty much everywhere that we go. Something else that we see pretty much everywhere that we go are water filters. Now, on a space mission, there isn't that much water available. At least, not any more than what we have on Earth, which is a lot, but maybe not enough. Now, on those missions, NASA wanted to make sure that the water was free of harmful bacteria, because there's no emergency room up on the moon. So according to an article from the University of Arizona, NASA scientists developed this water filtration method using silver ions that was able to get rid of this bacteria without adding harmful chemicals like chlorine. And I mean, chlorine kind of makes it smell bad too, so I wouldn't really want to drink that water. Now, the same method is used in pools, ponds, and cooling towers alike. Now, using chlorine isn't really a bad thing, but it's a lot more difficult to do it back then. You know, nowadays we have all this new technology that we're able to do it more safely, but back then it was kind of more risky. And this newer method was way safer and way more reliable. And according to NASA, this same method that they use with the silver ions has actually been updated to be effective against different pathogens as well. And it can also be used in zoos for their water supplies. Now, not only do zoos need a good water supply and good food, but so do we. Last but not least, we can thank NASA for our food safety. NASA had to ensure that the food their astronauts were eating wasn't contaminated with any bacteria or other harmful bodies. Now, when we think of our food, we think that's pretty safe. You know, even if we don't know exactly where it came from or exactly how it was made, we can be pretty confident that it's safe because we got it from the grocery store. Now, before the 1960s, or even the 1970s, that wasn't always the case. You know, there was this one case where they found glass shards in kids' cereal, and that kind of sparked a whole controversy. And around that time, NASA developed the Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Point System, or HACCP, to quality test the food on the Apollo missions, because you couldn't have glass shards in their cereal or in their food, because, you know, again, no emergency room on the moon or up in space. You want to make sure that they were completely safe and that all of their food was safe to be even on the spacecraft so that any remnants couldn't fly around and damage something. Now, nowadays, this system is still used for all of our food that we consume from all the different food companies that we get it from. Without these systems, we wouldn't be as safe from foodborne illnesses as we are. You know, that's why you probably shouldn't follow those new trends of eating raw things that aren't meant to be raw. That's why we have these systems in place to check on those foods. All right, now I think that that's a pretty good list. I'm sure there are more, and you can actually check out this really cool website that I got a lot of the information from. It's called NASA Spinoffs. And it is actually a magazine that dates back to 1975 that talks about all these different technologies and methods that we actually have gotten from NASA and the space missions and from all that exploration that we've done. Because believe it or not, a lot of our technology that we have is from that and from a bunch of other things, you know, space-related, but especially those missions. All right, now let's get on to some space-related tunes.